I'm just going to do my intro like I mentioned I would.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Adriana Sisko, and I'm interviewing Sally Simonton for The Country, Remembering Lexington's First Lesbian Bar. The date is October 2nd, 2020, and we are conducting this interview over Zoom, considering everything that's happening. Whereas I'm in Lexington, Sally is over in Frankfurt. Sally, thank you for talking to me today, by the way.
You're most welcome.
Thank you. And to start us off, how about you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Well, I was born and raised in southeastern Kentucky. Left there in 74 to go to school at UK in Lexington. First time ever away from, you know, mom and dad, and the big city of Lexington was just awe-inspiring after growing up in a very small town. I graduated from UK, started work at Blood Horse Magazine, got a call from an old college roommate that said, my boyfriend and I are starting work for a new company in Washington, D.C., and we want you to come work for us. Turned out it was USA Today. Pretty cool. I was there for 9 years. Got back to Lexington in 94, and have been in Frankfurt for 3 years now. So I was in Lexington before that, but I've been in Frankfurt since then. After USA Today, I worked for Host Communications. I worked for WVLK Radio. Not VLK. Yeah, VLK Radio. And then went to work for the state as an investigator for unemployment. And I'm actually doing that part-time now. I was found disabled in 16. Bought a car. 2 days later, the doctor told me I'd never go back to work. Wow. So that was a little scary at that time. So I'm back working part-time during COVID to help with all the unemployment fiasco that's going on, because it is a train wreck right now. And that was simply because, you know, we're used to having maybe 2,000 claims a week. And in March, we had over 90,000 in 1 week. So we're still trying to dig out from under that. And people are upset, and I don't blame them, but, you know, it is what it is, and we have to do our jobs, and it takes time to do it. So, I mean, they've brought a bunch of us back, all of us that retired over the last probably 10 years. They brought us all back to help out, because so it is still an ongoing thing, unfortunately, for everybody involved.
Right, right. I made a note to, you know, as we go to the interview, to like loop back around and like talk about all that stuff as well.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah, yeah, because obviously it's very significant. I'll start with the earlier stuff though first, obviously.
Okay.
So you mentioned that you grew up in southeastern Kentucky. What specific city, town, or county were you?
Harlan.
Harlan?
Okay. Harlan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how long were you there for? How many years?
Well, I was 18.
Oh, okay. So you were in the same place for, you know,
yes,
quite a while.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
Give me the general sense of what it was like being a little kid there. What was it like?
It was really nice. I wouldn't trade growing up there for anything in the world. People cared about you. People watched out for you. If you were out on the road or something and you knew, you know, everybody knew you weren't supposed to be out on the road, somebody would call and tell your mom, Sally's out on the road. You need to call her in, you know? It was like we looked out for each other. And still to this day, my parents have passed, but my sister still lives there. And her husband's a judge and all, and they live in a real nice place. And so going there is like, I hate to use the phrase coming home, but it's like a safety place. And when I go there even now, I feel safe. I walk down the street and people yell at you. You're like, hey. You know, I haven't seen you in 30 years, but hey, how you doing? You know, but it was safe. I that's the only word I can think of was you felt protected. Even now, when I go back, I feel protected. Like if anything was to happen, you know, I would be okay. I mean, it would be taken care of, you know, because I grew up there and people know me or know my name or whatever.
Yeah, gotcha. And so you mentioned it was one of those towns where, you know, say you're out in the street, someone would call your parents and be like, oh, you know, Sally's out on the road, you better.
Right.
So the houses, like, within view of each other, what kind of house did you live
in? They were in view of each other. I lived actually in a neighborhood that was cut back. My grandfather built the neighborhood. It was cut back into the mountain, basically. And you had a row of houses in the front and a row in the back. And then we were the top house. What granddaddy did was when the land that was left over after he built the neighborhood, he flattened out at the top and gave that to mom and dad for their wedding gift. Mm-hmm. So they built a house and we moved there when I was one, or just barely turned one. So it's the only house I'm aware of I was ever in. I mean, I wasn't another one until I was one, but I don't remember it at all or anything about it. So,
yeah. And were there kids that you played with in the area or that?
Oh, my goodness. I grew up with 9 guys in the neighborhood. So go figure. I was playing sports as soon as I could throw a ball. You know, we played basketball. I played tackle football with the boys till I was 17. My body's eat up with all this arthritis now, and I guess that's probably why. But we played basketball, football, wiffle ball, you know, and most of the time parents would come out and watch, you know, so the neighborhood was very close. There was only one or two houses that were elderly people that we didn't see very much of. But other than that, you know, everybody was, you know, we're playing 1-2-3 red light, you know, at night on Marybelle's driveway. And so all the parents go to Marybelle's house and have a drink and sit around and talk while the kids played outside. So, and it was just, you know, I could throw a rock to her house. It was right just down the hill. So to my house was always uphill. I always had to go uphill to go to my house. So,
yeah, you mentioned playing, you know, a lot of sports and playing tackle football, wasn't it, with the boys until 17? Was this sort of just like, was this mostly outside of school or did you ever do any?
That was outside of school. Yeah, that was out of school. They didn't have anything for women except golf.
Did you do that?
Yeah, I played. Mother put a club in my hand when I was 4 years old and I didn't put it down until the doctor said I couldn't play anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to the state tournament from the 6th grade through the 12th grade. My junior year, I won the regional. My senior year, I was 2nd in the regional and 8th in the state. Mm-hmm. So, and mother somehow, because mother played golf back in the 30s and 40s with Babe Zaharias and what's her name, Sandra, can't think of her name, Louise Suggs, people that were founding members of the LPGA. And the LPGA was founded in 1950, and mom and dad got married in 48. And I always told daddy, I said, you know what? If you'd have just waited a few years, mother would have been a founding member of the LPGA. LPGA. She would have been one of the founding members, and I'd have been a lot younger. So, you know, that was always kind of the family joke. And right out of high school, mother somehow finagled me an invitation to the LPGA school that they had just formed, just brand new, and wanted me to go on tour and wanted me to do all that. And all I could think of was that it was going to cost a whole lot of money. And we didn't have that kind of money. I mean, I was smart enough to know that my parents were, you know, they worked hard. They both had jobs. Mother weighed coal trucks at a tipple from daylight till dark every day. Dad was a coal miner for a while. Then he became a state employee, was a probation and parole officer in one of the worst counties in the state. I remember laying on the floor one time at night. Mom and dad came and got us out of the bed, brought us into their bedroom and said, stay on the floor. And a bullet came through the window. Somebody was shooting at the house because they were mad that daddy took their son or whoever to jail. But, you know, it was kind of like that. So we knew all the state policemen because daddy was a parole officer. We knew all them. We knew the sheriff. We knew, you know, it was like, it was a small town. We knew everybody. And it, you know, it just, It was really pretty cool. I played golf until, you know, the when I was a senior, and then mother got this invitation, and when I got it, and I got it in the mail to me, and I read it, and I was like, what is this? And mother goes, look at it, read it. And I did, and I was like, oh my God. And of course it had what it cost, which was like 10 grand. And I was like, we don't have that kind of money. They're like, don't worry about the money. Do you want to do it? Or do you want to go to UK? My daddy graduated from UK. My sister went there. She didn't graduate. My brother went to someplace else. He didn't graduate. So dad was the only one in the family that had graduated. So I swore my whole life I was going to the University of Kentucky like my daddy did, and I was going to graduate come hell or high water. I was going to do it. And mother was so mad because I turned down the LPGA invitation. And what they didn't tell me at the time was that, you know, they had 50 friends in Harlan that were willing to put up $1,000 for me to get started. Well, they didn't tell me that. They told me that after the fact, like, you know, when I was 50 years old. And I was like, why didn't you all ever tell me that? My biggest fear back then was that it doesn't cost that much to go to UK, and you know, compared to what the LPGA was. And I remember being so mad at my mother for so many years because she never told me that. They never told me. I would have probably done it. My life would have been totally different because, I mean, I was pretty good and capable of doing better even. And, you know, it was just one of those points in life that you look back and you go, why didn't you do that? But at the same time, my mindset was, we don't have that kind of money. I'm not going to put my family in debt because of my dream. But what I realize now is that it was my mother's dream. It was not my dream. It was my mother's dream. And I was dating this guy, and I thought I was in love and all this stuff. And he was at UK. So I was like, I'm going to UK. So that's how I ended up at UK. But it was a lifelong thing. I always wanted to go there because daddy did.
Right, right. And you mentioned that, you know, you noticed as a kid that your parents, you know, both had all these different jobs and they were working really hard. And, you know, judging by the story about the golfing stuff, did you have like an awareness that money was tight, or was it more just like, oh, we don't have that money?
I just remember from being a little kid and asking for a toy or asking for something. And I always got, we don't have the money. Always. So I grew up thinking we didn't have any money. I was wrong, but I didn't know that at the time. I thought we were poor. Mm. You know, we're poor. We can't afford that. You know, the new bikes or the new whatever fad came out. It was the 70s. You had a fad every other day. You had what? You had rocks. You had, you know, moon rocks. You had crazy stuff, you know. And as a kid, it's like you want all that. And all I ever heard was, we don't have the money. So that kind of was my mindset all along. We don't have the money to do this, you know. But I gave them the opportunity when I said to them, we don't have the money for me to go to the LPGA. They could have said, yes, we do. Would have made a difference. But they didn't. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in terms of the, like, other aspects of just, like, the home and family environment, did you all ever go to church? And if so, like.
Oh, yeah. We were. I joined the church, and when I was 12 years old, I sang in the choir. We did all the plays, you know, the Christmas play, the Easter play, anything. We were way involved with it a lot. Now, my mother was not. So it was just dad and us three kids. So we were pretty involved in it. Now, my brother kind of, in high school, he decided he didn't want to go. And dad and mom always left it up to us if we wanted to go or not, because we had one parent that was, you know, gung-ho, true believer and wanted to go every Sunday. And we had one parent that couldn't wait to get on the golf course every Sunday. So that's kind of how it was.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of church was it? Like what denomination?
Presbyterian.
Uh-huh.
Presbyterian church. Yes.
And I want to get into school. Like, were you someone who really enjoyed school? Didn't enjoy it somewhere in the middle?
I loved it. I loved school. And I loved it more just to see my friends than anything else. You know, I didn't really like, math. I hated math. God, I hated math. But I love the sciences and the arts, that kind of thing. I loved all that stuff. But yeah, math was the one subject that just never could wrap my head around that. I got a C in algebra when I was a sophomore, and it was the only C I'd ever had. And they were, mom and dad were livid. They were just livid. They're like, this is easy. This is easy. I said, well, then you tell me what it is. And they're like, we don't know, because they never did it. You know, they didn't have algebra when they were in school. And it just, you know, I love school for the socializing, you know, and the sports. I had, we had PE back then, and you had to have, you know, Chuck Taylors, which were about the only tennis shoe available. You had to have them, but you couldn't walk in with them and play on the gym floor in them. You had to go in and change clothes, change shoes, to get on the gym floor. My senior year, I actually played, I had a sixth period where I had enough credits. And so all my friends like got jobs and worked, and not me. I played basketball in the gym with the boys, like all the varsity players and all. And they were like, man, you need to be on our team. You need to be on our team. I wanted to play basketball at UK badly, but I had never had any formal training, never with drills and that kind of stuff. None of it. And I didn't want to get down there and look stupid. So we had a coach, Doc Gray. I will never forget him. Oh my God. He was just, you know, I don't even know his first name, but he was wonderful. He was my PE teacher when I was in elementary school, and he was the assistant basketball coach at the time. And I asked him, I said, will you help me learn basketball drills? Because I don't know any. I've never done them before, you know, and I don't want to get up there and get to UK and look stupid. He said, you want to play at UK? And I said, yes. He said, absolutely, I'll help you. So sixth period, every day, had the varsity boys in there. He would come in and run us through drills to teach me how to do that. And all the guys knew it was for me. It wasn't for anything else, you know, and they helped me. They gave me tips. You know, if you're going to do this and cut this way, you need to do it this way. You know, your footwork, you know, the fake with the head, the fake with the hands, you know, all that stuff. They taught me so much that one year. And when they had basketball, that was my junior year. Mm-hmm. When they had basketball tryouts, my senior year, everybody wanted me to try out. And I asked dad and mom, and they were like, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. You can't do that. But they did say, because Coach Gray talked to dad and said, look, she wants to play at UK next year. You know, we're trying to help her with drills and stuff that she should know if she'd had any kind of formal basketball background. She should know going into college. And I'm trying to help her out with that. Do you care if she just practices with the team up to the cut, you know, when they cut people? And dad said, that would be fine. I didn't get cut, but they wouldn't, they, you know, it, girls didn't play back then. It was, yeah, I mean, there wasn't even a question that I could actually play because girls didn't do that. It wasn't allowed. Okay. So.
Yeah. I was curious about that. Cause it sounds like you had a lot of different people in your life who were very supportive of this.
Yes,
and helping you practice and train, but then obviously, you know, especially at that time, you know, girls and women doing these things.
We didn't do that. Yeah. We didn't.
Right.
Do
that. Yeah. And so were you aware of that when you were younger?
Or? Yes. Yes. And in fact, Coach Gray and Coach Walker, Tolbert Walker, two just wonderful, wonderful African-American men that told me I could do anything, that I was capable. I was athletic. You know, that I could do anything I wanted to if I put my mind to it, that I just had to decide that's what I wanted to do and do it. Mm-hmm. And nobody ever said that to me, really, except mom and dad. You know, nobody really ever said, Sally, you can go places, you can do things, you can, you know, you can have fun doing this, and you can do it successfully. That was huge. They said, everybody knows you're great on the golf course, but what they don't know is that you're great other places too. So that was the big influence when I was younger of those two saying, and of course I stayed in close contact with them all the way through school. And it was one of those things that as a girl growing up with nine guys playing boy stuff, we didn't have any girl stuff. My sister was 4 years older than me, so she couldn't deal with me. I was too young and all that stuff. So it was the boy stuff I did. I mean, we played fort and we played war and we played, you know, all the sports and, you know, watched football and watched basketball and, you know, grew up huge Kentucky fans. In fact, the first song I ever learned as a kid was the Kentucky Fight song because that was Dad's school and that's what we learned and that's what I sang when we were little. So, and the second one was the North Carolina Fight song because my mother went to North Carolina at Greensboro, what is now, it was back then North Carolina Women's College. It's now North Carolina, University of North Carolina at Greensboro, I think is what it is now. But yeah, so those were the two first songs I learned.
And it sounds like, you know, with all the sports and all, you were, you know, playing around, practicing with a lot of boys at that age.
All the time.
Yeah. What about your
girls didn't like me. Mm-hmm. Girls didn't like me because the boys were my friends.
Yeah, I was getting that sense, but I wanted to make sure. So was it mostly the guys that were your friends? Yeah.
I mean, I had girls. I was friends with a lot of girls, too. Yeah. But a lot of them would get, even my friends would get, if they liked, say, this guy named Frank, and I've known Frank my whole life, you know, hey, Frank, what's up, man? Hey, Sally, come here and tell you something. Love it. You know, they're like, why are you talking to him? He's dating so-and-so. He's my friend. I'm not going to not talk to him just because he's dating somebody else. You know, he's my friend. And I mean, as far as I knew, honestly, until I was about 13, 12 or 13, when I started getting boobs, I thought I was a boy. I mean, seriously, I just knew that God had put me in the wrong body because I was a boy. Because I was good at all boy stuff. I wasn't good at the girl stuff. I didn't do makeup. I didn't play dress up. I didn't play with dolls. It was a total upbringing of male influence, I guess you could say. Which is really kind of funny because I don't trust males now at all. Uh-huh. And back then they were my best friends. So, yeah.
How about the kind of clothing you wore at that age? Was it, because you're talking about like the things you like to do being more of like the stereotypical like boyish things. What about clothing?
I wore my brother's hand-me-downs unless mother got me something at the store. You know, like, but it was like we had to wear dresses all the way through high school. Okay. We were not allowed to wear pants. In fact, I think my senior year they said, oh, what was it? If it snowed over 2 inches, then we were allowed to wear pants to school. Stupid stuff. Yeah. I mean, I got in trouble one time. They were going to suspend me because I wore pants. Sally felt better in pants. That's what it was, you know. All through my career, I wore either skirt and heels. Every once in a while, I wore what's called culottes. I don't know if you remember them or not. That the big blousy ones that when you know, unless you stood with your legs apart, you couldn't tell you weren't wearing a skirt. But I wasn't wearing a skirt.
You mentioned that, you know, when you're younger, some of your female friends would kind of get bothered if you were talking to one of your guy friends, mm-hmm. they're dating someone. So I wanted to ask, what was the sort of dating life like at that stage of schooling, like middle school, high school? Was it something you observed? Was it something you were around or involved in?
I really didn't get involved in it till high school. Mm-hmm. Because I always knew I was different. But I didn't know what it was, you know, back then. Or, you know, nobody, I mean, they put words to it. And, you know, I was probably the worst one that yelled queer or whatever to somebody else, just trying to hide mine. You know, you get, you know, I hate that. Oh, that's disgusting. That's, you know, and you do it because you're protecting yourself at the time. I don't think I really put a name to it until I met my first girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, okay, that's what it is. You know, I told myself my whole life, like, for example, somebody in a movie, I mean, it was attraction. It was total attraction. And I was telling myself, that's not what it is. It's just that she's pretty and I want to be that pretty. That's all that is. I mean, I told myself that for years to deny what I actually was.
You mentioned you always knew you were different and that it took some time to sort of figure out, like, in what way, what word. But tell me more about, like, that early feeling. Like, what was it that made you feel so different from maybe other people?
Well, I mean, we'd come out of movies and the people I were with, the girls were talking about the male actors, and all I could think about was the female actor, female actress. So it was just like, why don't I see what they see? You know, why is this? Again, I made the excuse that I'm not attracted to them. I'm jealous because I want to be that pretty. They're very pretty and I want to be that pretty. And everybody agreed they were pretty. So I was an outcast for saying that, you know, but we did not view things the same ever. You know, and they'd be like, isn't he so cute? I'd kind of go, you know. Don't you think he's cute? Well, yes, I guess. Because I didn't look at guys. Guys were my friends. I didn't look at them as being attracted to them or not. You know? And I mean, I faked it a whole lot.
Yeah.
I faked a lot. and lied a lot. And when I look back, I don't even know why I did it. You know? Except that I guess it was to protect me. You know, I just was protecting myself because I was different. And because I played sports, some people didn't like me. Jimmy Robinson's mother hated me because when I was young, my brother played minor league baseball. And one afternoon, dad called mother from the church and said, because they were playing out behind the church, called him and said, can you bring Sally down here? Because I only have 8 boys and I need 9 to practice. Can you bring Sally down here and let her, you know, sit in for this moment? Well, Jimmy Robinson missed that practice and 2 more. So on Saturday when the game started, I did and Jimmy didn't. And I went 3 for 4 and I had like 4 runs batted in and threw a guy out at second from right field and, you know, did really well. And as soon as it was over, Jimmy Robinson's mother got in my dad's face and said, how dare you sit my son for your daughter? And I remember my daddy saying, well, first of all, she's a hell of a lot better than he is. But it was a big deal. And then daddy sat me down and said, I'm sorry, you can't play anymore. I cried and cried and cried. But it, you know, it just wasn't something you did back then. I'm sorry, that was kind of off the subject, but
it's connected though, because I mean, you're talking about sort of like unexpected behaviors that people might label in different kind of ways.
Right, right, exactly.
Yeah, totally relevant, yeah. And sort of connected to that, and also what we were just talking about, how you feeling like you were different and looking at other people and kind of comparing yourself to them. What was your awareness of anything like lesbian, gay, LGBT growing up? Like,
nothing.
Did you ever talk about it, or was it just
nothing? Nothing. There was one little boy. I hate to say it, but I'm still really good friends with him to this day, and he's a wonderful human being. But he's gay, and he was very effeminate, and people made so much fun of him. And instead of standing up for him, I did later on, but early on I didn't. And instead of standing up for him, I joined the crowd and said, boo, you know, because that's not right. I'm not that way. Oh, no, not me, you know. So, again, you're trying to protect yourself by doing stupid things or what tend to, you know, in the long run, they're really stupid. You don't realize it at the time because you're a kid, but you're just doing really, really cruel things.
Mm-hmm. And so that was something that could be, you know, at that time, you know, where you were, could be used to like potentially like make fun of somebody or something.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We did. Absolutely. Uh-huh. We were horrible. Uh-huh. I mean, and we were horrible. And I've apologized to him face to face years ago, apologized for being a jerk. And he hugged me and he said, you know, I love you. I've always loved you and I always will love you. There's, you know, nothing you could really do that would make me stop doing that. And I don't remember you being that bad. So I thought I was horrible and he doesn't remember me being that bad. So maybe I wasn't that bad. I don't know. I thought I was, but.
Do you remember ever hearing the word, like, especially as you grew up, the word lesbian or anything?
No, not lesbian.
Specifically, yeah.
It was queer, faggot. But lesbian never. And now I do remember one time I was in, maybe the seventh or eighth grade, and the talk around town was these two women lived in this house down in Lowell, and they lived together. And that, you know, oh my God, you know, that was horrible. Well, their house got burnt down. And after that, it came out that they were lesbians, and that's why their house got burnt. I don't think there were ever any charges filed, but, you know, it was okay to burn somebody's house down if they were lesbian, I guess. That was probably the first time the thought of it crossed my mind.
Yeah.
The actuality of being with a woman. It had never really... I mean, I thought about it, but the actual act had never crossed my mind before until that happened. And I said, why did they burn their house down? Because they live together. That's stupid. And mother said, they're queer. And I was all of a sudden, you know, girls can be queer too? Huh? So that was kind of okay. Well, we won't talk about it. I'm just jealous because they're pretty.
How old were you when that happened, hearing that story?
About seventh or eighth grade. So what is that, 13, 14, somewhere in there?
Yeah. And when you mentioned that, it was a whole process of, you know, learning about different things and denial and, you know, the whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
When was it that you were like, oh, this is kind of actually happening?
Yeah. Oh, that actually happens in the world. It's not just in my mind.
Right.
There might be other people like me. Oh my God. Cause I mean, I thought I was on an island. I was, you know, the only person that felt like this. Nobody else felt like this. Little did I know there were several that did, but you know, we didn't know it back then. Girls that I played softball with during the summers and stuff on the league, you know, summer league, I found out later on that are lesbians, and we've gotten into contact over Facebook, and you know, it's kind of nice, you know, knowing that even though I felt like I was on an island somewhere and there was nobody else like me at all in the whole world, all of a sudden there was.
Yeah. When was that? How old were you when you started putting together, oh, all, you know, there's all these other people?
Not until I got to college.
College. Okay. Mm-hmm. And when was the first girlfriend? You mentioned the first girlfriend earlier.
That was in the spring of 19, so it was 75 maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she played basketball with us, and she was from California, which we all kind of went, ooh, you know, you're from California, ooh. But the first thing she said to me was, you talk funny. Like, great. You know, but yeah, there was an instant attraction, and wow, it was a time when it was like everything fell into place. It, like I had all my life, I had all these pieces hanging out around me and I didn't know where they belonged, you know? And then after that, it was like that next morning, man, the sun was brighter, you know, I had a pop in my walk and, you know, this is what I am. Yes. But again, we had to hide it. It was not allowed. After college, you know, if somebody found out, you'd lose your home, you'd lose your job, you'd lose everything, you know, and God forbid if you had a kid, like from a former relationship with a man or something, they'd take your kid away from you. So yeah, it was not something we were extremely out about. Like now it doesn't matter. Now in front of my house, I could walk up there and show you. I've got a rainbow rock right in the front yard. I've got a rainbow, the thing goes around when the wind blows. Got that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm very obvious now. I'm very obvious and out now, you know. but it's okay to be now. And it wasn't back then.
And you mentioned that was in 75 or so when you all met. Yeah. And that, so that would have been during college for you.
Yes.
Right?
Okay, yes. We were together all the way through college and a couple of years afterwards.
Okay. Yeah.
And then she went back to California.
Right.
And you broke my heart.
Back to Cali. Yeah. And you mentioned that when you first went to UK, like when you, you know, decide to go that route, you go to UK, you start at UK, that, you had a boyfriend, but obviously you already mentioned that, you know, in your mind, you know, guys were just like your friends and you didn't really see them that way. So what was your sort of like mental, emotional experience? Like just kind of having to go through those motions.
When I was a freshman, a junior asked me to the prom. Oh my God. It was, you know, that was the ultimate. My mother wasn't going to let me go. And then my sister talked her into it. And I went to the prom with him for the next 4 years. There wasn't anything physical really till after high school with him. And when it was physical, I remember my first reaction was, is that it? That's it? Really? This is what everybody's been screaming and crying about. That's so wonderful. I don't see the wonder. What's going on here? So, but you know, I thought, well, okay, that's just how it is. And we as women, you know, over the years have had to put up with this and put up, you know, and I just thought that's what I was supposed to do. You know, you're taught to grow up and get married and have kids. And that's what I was supposed, thought I was supposed to do, even though I love kids as far as I taught swimming, I taught diving, taught them how to play ball, helped with Little League, helped with T-ball, helped with, you know, a bunch of stuff in Harlan while I was in high school, just because I love the sports so much. But yeah, it was, I mean, with Mark, it was, he was still my friend. We still played basketball together, football, you know, he was still my friend, but I sat by him and next to him in the car and we rode around together. That was basically our dating in Harlan. There wasn't much to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it just, I don't know. Then I met Kathy and see ya, Mark. He graduated a couple of years before me and was living in Ashland. And I went up on a Saturday morning, bright and early. I had decided it was time. I'm done. It's time to break up. I'm not going to be mean and do it over the phone. I'm going to do it face to face. So I got up and drove to Ashland on a Saturday morning, and I'll never forget his roommate was sitting in the living room when I walked in, and his face was like, oh my God, what are you doing here? Oh my God. Well, Mark was upstairs in bed with somebody else. So it gave me the opportunity to say, fine, see ya, I'm gone. You know, and he comes running out in his underwear going, hey, wait, baby. No. I'm done. And so, you know, and my mother till the day she died thought Mark hurt me so bad that it turned me to women. That's how that happened.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's how that happened.
Right. That's how it works.
Right. Yeah, that's what works. Absolutely.
Yeah. And so I guess that means at some point your mother or maybe even both your parents found out about, you know, your sexuality or sexual identity then, right?
I actually told my mother, I think it was either 77 or 78. Oh, we were watching Dynasty.
Uh-huh.
And one of the end programs, the last program of the year, the season finale, ended with, you know, their son was gay. And the sister saying, you know, somebody say it, Stephen is gay, and nobody would say anything. And it ended like that. And the first thing my mother did was look at me and go, you're like that, aren't you? And I said, if you don't want to know, don't ask me. But if you want to know, ask me again, and I'll tell you. I won't lie to you. And so she asked me again, and I said, yeah. She said, don't tell your daddy, it'll kill him. And from that moment on, mother made my life hell. I'd run around with my best friend, Julie, that had lived in the neighborhood since I was about, what, 7 or 8 or so, but she was a few years younger and didn't play any of the sports, but we played in the creek together and went hiking together and that kind of stuff. So, God, I forgot what, I've lost my train of thought.
Well, you mentioned I asked how your mother found out. You mentioned the Dynasty episode.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and she asked you and, you know, that whole
thing. I would do stuff with Julie and she'd go, well, I sure wish Julie would wear off on you. And I'd be like, what are you talking about? Well, she likes men. I wish I'd wear off on you. And I was just like, leave me alone. You know, I'm done. So, and then when I finally, Dad, it was like, let's see, I was living in Washington and had come home for a weekend or something. And Daddy asked me, said, because I was living with my girlfriend up there, and he goes, you know, are you and her, you know, are y'all a couple? And I just looked at him and I thought, I hope this doesn't kill him, because I couldn't lie to my daddy. And I said, yes, sir, we are. He goes, well, okay. And he kind of didn't say anything. And he goes, why haven't you told me before? And I said, well, mother told me not to. He's like, what do you mean? So I told him, I said, you know, mother's known for years and never said a word, because she told me it would kill you. And he just looked at me and shook his head and he said, you know what, Sally, all I want is for you to be happy. And if that's what makes you happy, that's okay. But as long as mother was in the house, I was allowed in, but my girlfriend was not. So there were several years during the 80s that I never went home. I would call my dad at his office and talk to him there, but I wouldn't call the house and I didn't go home. And he finally convinced me I needed to come home one weekend, and I did. Mother apologized, but you have to understand, my mother was an alcoholic and she was always drinking. I mean, when I was a kid in the summertime, I knew better than to take a sip out of my mother's iced tea, because it was never iced tea. But she apologized, but she was also very intoxicated when she did it. So whether she meant it or not, I don't know. So
how old are you when that happened?
Oh, wow. Let's see.
Yeah.
In my 30s, late 30s, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously your mom finds out, your dad finds out. He's more fine with it than, you know, I guess.
Yeah, he was fine with it. You know, he didn't die at all. He was fine with it.
Mm-hmm. And what about, you mentioned you had a sister, right?
I do have an older sister. She's 4 years older than me.
Uh-huh.
When I told her, I actually told her before I told mother, and she was devastated. She said, I have to believe this is a phase. I said, Jane, it's not. And she goes, you let me believe that, please. I said, all right, you can believe that. So it wasn't a phase.
Yeah, long phase.
Very long phase.
It's eternal.
Yeah.
And what about, you know, other family or friends, like, at that time? Or was it only these people that kind of knew, considering, you know?
Oh, no, I didn't tell anybody even friends at that time, I didn't tell anybody. Because you weren't supposed to do that. And, you know, we can't be around other people and do this. And we can lose jobs and homes. And, you know, it was just something you didn't do. So, yeah, no, nobody knew until... when Kathy and I broke up, when she went to California, my best friend, or my good friend that pitched for us at UK, Jana, came over, and we had a reunity week. We took a whole week. I think it was spring break, from school, cause she was still in school. And we drank, you know, reunity Lambrusco all week long. And just stayed drunk, because I was a crying fool at the time. You know, I was devastated. And then at the end of that week, she got a phone call and was like, oh, you're kidding. She hung up the phone and she said, get dressed, we're going out. Well, I'd already told her at this point. And she said, well, I am too. And this person is, and this person is, and this person. I was like going, really? Really? Are you kidding me? Really? Because back then we all hit it so well. Even when we were playing ball with each other, softball during the, you know, the summer times and stuff, we still hid that. you know, there was a few separate, few group of girls that all knew each other, and they knew, and they were always a little bit closer than the rest of us. We never knew why. We do now, but we didn't know then because it was so secretive.
Yeah. And I have a couple follow-up questions. So you mentioned okay. your first girlfriend's name was Kathy. Was that mm-hmm. what you said? Yeah. I noticed that your name on your email is Kathy.
It's Casey.
Oh, okay. It's
Casey. I'm sorry. That was a college nickname I had.
Uh-huh.
And when I first opened up my Yahoo account was back in the late 90s when it was, everybody was, oh, you know, people are going to know you. They're going to be able to see everything, and you better not put your name on it. So I didn't put my name on it, and I just haven't ever changed it. I don't know that I can change it.
Right. It might just be like that forever. Yeah, that's what I asked you at the beginning.
That's what that is.
Yeah, that's what I was making sure.
Yeah, yeah. Mighty Casey has struck out. My friend Jana gave it to me. She struck me out 1 year. Okay. So they started calling me Casey.
And okay, and then another follow-up question. In terms of like life at UK, did you live on campus or off campus?
I did. I lived on campus for 2 years and then in the sorority house for 2 years.
Mm-hmm. And
or no, I take that back. The sorority house for a year and a half. And then that last semester, Kathy and I had an apartment together. Right on. It was right close to campus, though. We could still walk.
Okay, gotcha. And I was curious, in terms of just, you know, hearing people talk about things, was, again, the whole lesbian gay thing not something that people ever talked about? Or did you ever hear people reference it?
Not unless you were with a group of friends that all knew. And you knew that they knew.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, and then I think it was when we talked on the phone, you mentioned you were either 19, 20, 21 when you first heard about and started going to the country. Is that true?
Yes, yes. Uh-huh. Well, it wasn't that early. It was actually the year after. I'm sorry, do I need to shut that door? The dog's bothering you.
No, it's not that bad right now. If it gets like more, then we'll think about it.
I think my roommate's home, so it might be real bad for him.
Okay, yeah. I think you should go ahead and do it then.
Okay, let me shut that door.
Okay, sure. I'll be right here.
Okay, sorry.
Oh, it's okay. And it's much better now. Thank you for doing that.
My big fear is that she's just getting out of the car. When she walks in the door, she may open this door to let them out.
Okay.
So
we'll take it as it comes.
Okay. Yeah, sorry.
No worries. It's okay.
Sorry.
No problem. So wait, how old were you when you started going to the country then?
Well, we had to be 21 to get in.
Uh-huh.
And I did not use, I used fake IDs when I was in college to get in bars, but I never used it there. So I had to be at least 21.
Okay.
So it was a few years after college.
Okay.
When it opened.
Yeah.
So late 70s, early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And I left in 81. So there was only a couple of years of it to go to Washington in 81. So
in 81.
It was the end of 81, but.
Okay. And I guess we're starting to get into the country portion now.
Yeah.
If we're ready to do that, okay.
Ready.
Yeah. How did you hear about it? I think you told me over the phone, but, you know, for the benefit.
My friend Jana got that phone call, like, at that last week of our week-long drunk after I'd broken up with Kathy and, like, my life was ending and, you know, all this stuff. And she said, get dressed. We're going out. I said, going out where? She goes, there's a new bar called The Country. I said, what kind of bar? She's a lesbian bar. Oh my God, really? Really? How do I need to dress? What do I, you know, what? T-shirts and jeans. Come on, let's go. So obviously we'd been drunk all week. So we took showers and sobered up and got dressed. And I was scared to death when I walked in. My heart was beating so fast and I couldn't hardly breathe. And I you know, putting one foot in front of the other was an effort to get in there. Well, Jaina walks in like she'd been there, you know, forever, and she'd never been there either, but I knew everybody in there. Everybody's, hey, Sally, how you doing? About time you got here. I'm going, oh my God. Hey, how you doing? Oh my God. Jaina, did you know? And she said, yeah. And I said, why didn't you tell me? You know, and it was just one of those, it was an immediate environment of safety, if you will. Because like I said, you know, if you let it out, you could get fired. You lose your job, lose your home, lose everything. So it wasn't something you let out. Okay. But here I am in a room full of people, and they're all women, and they're all dancing together, and everybody's having fun, and we're drinking beer, and wow, you know? And it was like, and the funny part was, that first night that I was there, you know, I'm trying to be very nice and smile and, you know, hey, how you doing? That kind of thing. And I asked, there were some ladies at a table, and they had, you know, three of them, and they had an extra chair. And I said, can I borrow this chair? Is somebody using it? And the girl turned around and looked at me, and and she'd graduated a year before me from Harlan. She said, well, Lord, look at you. And I said, oh my God, really? And she goes, yeah, you didn't know that? And I said, no. And she was like, yeah. I was like, okay. So yeah, that was kind of cool. It was when we left that night, I couldn't wait to go back. I wanted to go home, go to sleep. So the next day we'd get here so I could go back the next night. Because first of all, the major part of the country was safety. We were safe in there. We could be who we were, how we were, all the time without question while we were in those four walls. Or more than that, but while we were inside those walls, you know, and I mean, it was actually a safety place for us, you know, a safe place. We could be ourselves. We could love each other. We could hug each other. We could kiss. We could, you know, have fun with friends, and nobody's going to judge us. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It makes perfect sense.
I mean, that's exactly what the country was, at least to me, was a safe place, you know, and you'd girls be in there, they're 15, 16 years old, and you know they are because you've played ball with them before, and they're in there, and it's like, how'd you get in here? And they'd show me an ID, and it, you know, looked like them, but it wasn't them, you know, and the cool part was the owner, she knew they were underage, she wasn't going to say anything. Because she knew it was a safe place for them too. And at the time, because we were older, it was like, wow, if we'd had something like this to go to at 15 and 16 years old, how much different we would feel. I mean, she wouldn't sell them beer. She wouldn't let them buy beer. I mean, she only had a beer license. She didn't have a liquor license because she couldn't get one because she was a woman, first of all, I think. And because of... she wanted to open, I don't know. I don't remember what it was, but she couldn't get a liquor license. So it was just beer, but she didn't serve any of the underage girls that she knew of, because she knew them, you know, and she'd be like, I'm sorry, you know, I can't buy you a beer. But somebody would go, give me two beers, and they'd give them to them, and then when one of them would end up in the young one's hand, you know. So, but the owner did not break any rules. She never broke any rules. She was just very, very, I think she got to where, because there were so many young people in there, she got to where she had a person at the door checking IDs. And if you didn't have one, you could not get in. And girls would cry. Young girls, even 20, I'll be 21 tomorrow. We'll come back tomorrow. They would just cry and cry and cry. And you know what? And I felt so bad for them because, again, it's a safe place. I mean, you're not even safe at home because you can't tell your mom and dad. They would be devastated, you know? Or even if you have told your mom and dad, you sure as heck couldn't tell them where you were going, you know? So, it was first and foremost a safe spot for us where we could be ourselves, you know? I mean, she had a TV up, put a TV up one time when there was a ball game on or something, you know, and everybody goes in there and watch the ball game. And we had so much fun. And I think I told you about the hat parties.
You did. Sundays.
On Sundays, JC would make one phone call, and that person make a phone call, and that person make a phone call, and so on and so on and so on. And it was a hat party. You could drink beer, but you had to have a hat on. You didn't, you know, and we all wore hats. We wore baseball caps most of the time, most of us. So we all had hats. Of course, there was always somebody funny that came in with a, you know, a big green witch's hat or something silly on. You know, we'd always, it was fun, okay? And we'd take up a collection at the end to pay the owner for her what she lost, because she had to give it away. She couldn't sell it. It was Sunday, blue laws, you know, back then. Even the malls weren't open on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was real different back then.
Yeah. What was the owner's name?
JC.
Yeah.
That was her initials. Yeah, JC.
Uh-huh. And where was the, I mean, some of this I already know, but I like to hear people sort of in their own words. Where was the country located?
It was in a little strip mall off Lane Allen Road.
Uh-huh.
If you're on Harrodsburg going out of town and you hit Lane Allen right there before, well, it what used to be Turfland Mall. You take a right. I think that restaurant Friends is still there on the corner. If not, anyway, it was in the left-hand side of that, the back part of that little strip mall there.
Mm-hmm.
So it had plenty of parking, had a little place out back. You could go out the back door and smoke a cigarette if you wanted to.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure there was other things being smoked out there, but back then, you know, because it was the 70s, it's what we did.
Right. What was the exterior like? Were there windows, no windows?
Nothing. There was nothing. You walked in a door, and then there was a store to the left that I think had a glass window, but then it was just wall, concrete wall, and wall on the right, and you went back in and went to the door to the left, and that was the country. Mm-hmm. And you walked back in, and there's a room here for dancing and a room here where the bar was and the bathrooms. That was it.
Yeah. And tell me more.
And we packed that place.
Yeah.
We did.
Tell me more about the inside. Was it crowded, not crowded, loud, quiet?
It was loud and crowded most of the time.
Yeah.
Now you walked in to just like a little foyer area kind of, I guess. And then off to the left was the big room that had all the dancing and all, where we danced. And then to the right was where the bar was, and there were tables and a pool table, and then the bathrooms to the back.
Mm-hmm.
Of that.
And for the bathrooms, were there like men's bathroom, women's bathroom?
Yes, was it of course. Okay. Of course.
Uh-huh.
Those were laws back then. You had to have both.
Uh-huh.
So we used both. We didn't care. There were seldom any men in there. Every once in a while, somebody's friend would come in or something, or they'd come in and we'd all, you know, party, or, you know, drag queens would come in and go, oh, I just wanted to see what this little place was like. Everybody said it's great. You know, that kind of thing. But normally there was just women, and we had no obstacles, if you will. There was nothing holding us back from being ourselves.
Yeah.
And we cut loose. We did. I mean, and it made us better people for it, because we had all this inside of us that we had kept bottled up for so many years. And hidden and lied about and, you know, made promises we knew we couldn't keep. And those kind of things. And, I mean, we did that for so long. And finally, we had a place where we could walk in and we didn't have to do that. You know, if you walk up, are you gay? Yeah. Be glad about it. You know, if you're not, say no. And I won't talk to you anymore or flirt with you or anything, you know. But it's okay if you're not, you know, but we are, and we're happy about it. And that was our safe place.
Yeah. And so were most, if not all the women there, lesbian or
oh, yeah.
somewhere in that
oh,
realm?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And what was the age range? Because you mentioned like sometimes there'd be some younger people.
The youngsters, the 21, as soon as they turned 21, they were there. And it was as old as, you know, we had one lady that we played ball with that was in her 40s, and she would come. So, and the age range was from A to Z, basically, from, you know, 21 up.
Okay. Yeah. And then just a few more basic questions about it.
Okay.
Get deeper. What days and times was it open? Like, what days of the week, what times?
I believe it was closed on Monday, and well, obviously Sunday, but I think it was open Tuesday through Saturday, if I'm not mistaken, till 1, from 9 to 1 or something like that, because you had to close at 1. That was the law.
What days did you usually go, or what nights did you usually go?
Definitely on the weekends, and usually sometimes during the week, depending on, you know, if somebody called and said, hey, what you doing? Let's go out and have a beer. Mm-hmm. Well, the only place we could go have a beer was the country. We couldn't go to, you know, the liquor store or the bar down the street, because we weren't really welcome there and we didn't feel comfortable there. So the only place we could go have a beer was the country. So I'd go have a beer or two and then go home. Or I might have 3 or 4 and stay there for a while. I talked about it being safe. We protected each other. Like, for example, if somebody was headed home and they had a roadblock or a DUI stop down the street waiting for us to come out. They knew we were there, you know, waiting for us to come out drunk and catch us. Somebody would call back to the bar and JC would make an announcement that there are law enforcement on this road stopping people, blah, 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 blah. So, you know, everybody head out. Usually everybody would go left because they're going back into Lexington. But then everybody would go right and go new circle and cut back around or something to avoid the cops. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, again, protection. Yeah. It was a safe spot that we didn't ever have before, ever.
Tell me more about the police presence. Like, did they ever, you know, because I think you mentioned some of this on the phone. Yeah. And just the traffic stop made me think about it. So tell me more about that.
Well, one time we had... we were all in there just partying, raising hell like we always did. And I was sitting back in the dance floor area with some friends, and somebody came in and said, the cops are here. Well, we all panicked, you know, because most of us believed that not only everybody else thought we were wrong, but that we were breaking some kind of law. I just knew they'd find some kind of law to break us and, you know, take us in. Well, they came in and they were just standing around, and these two girls were playing pool and their game was over. And one of the cops said, who's got next? And my friend Donna was playing, and she said, nobody that I know of. And he goes, can I? She said, 50 cents right there will do it for you. So he put his 50 cents up, and he and Donna played a thing of pool. Well, he had a cigarette hanging out of his mouth, an unlit cigarette hanging out of his mouth, for like 2 or 3 shots that he was shooting, the pool shots we were shooting. And I just walked over with my lighter and lit it up and said, would you like a light? And he goes, thank you so much, you know. So they never came in and were a bad presence, if you will. Okay, it was a good presence. They were doing their job, but... And they kind of wanted us to know that they weren't there to beat on us or do anything bad to us, just that they were around and they knew about us. And basically that's what they were saying. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't ever remember anybody getting in trouble with the law or anything that had anything to do with the country. Maybe a couple people got DUIs on the way home. But that's all I can think of. I don't think there was ever a raid, if you will, or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Did they ever take pictures?
Yes, they did.
Yeah, tell me more.
And
about
we
that.
Would turn the other way. We'd turn our face the other way every time. Everybody did. It was a common thing. You knew to do that. Even if you were out on the dance floor, you paid attention. If you saw a flash, you're like, whoa, where'd that come from? Because back in the day, you had to have a flash on a camera to take a picture. So everybody knew somebody was taking pictures after the first one. So if you weren't captured in the first one, you need to turn your head away. Find out where it's coming from and turn away.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think they took pictures?
Well, we were, I'd have no idea, but we were afraid that it was going to get out, you know, published in the paper, and we were all going to lose our jobs. And, you know, I have no idea. No idea why they did that.
Yeah. Did any of you, as in, you know, the women who went there, take pictures of each other for fun at the bar, or did you kind of know not to take pictures because of, you know, the need for secrecy?
I don't remember anybody taking pictures in there. I don't think so. I could be wrong. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong. It's not like today where everybody's got a camera on their cell phone and everybody's picturing.
Right.
You know, it was like to have a camera back then and take a picture, you had to pay for it to be developed, pay for the pictures, you know, and it took 3 days to get them back, 4 days to get them back, you know. So it wasn't something we did a lot of. Now, we took a lot of pictures on the softball field, mm-hmm. you know, when we're playing ball and stuff, but I don't remember any inside of the country.
Okay.
I could be wrong, but I don't remember.
Yeah. Yeah, I was curious about that. And when it comes to the clientele that was there, were there some people that were into the whole like butch femme sort of as like,
oh, yeah.
like role
oh, yeah.
more ambiguous
oh, yeah.
sort of the vibe with that?
Oh yeah, there was a whole bunch. But you know, there weren't groups like, you know, the butches stayed over here and the femmes stayed over. It wasn't like that. Everybody was intertwined and connected. And I don't remember feeling uncomfortable around anybody because of their dress or their, you know, composure or how they, you know, I don't ever remember that being an issue at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And another sort of basic question again, what were sort of the racial demographics of the people that went there? Was it mostly white? Was it mixed?
It was mostly white, but it was mixed. It was mixed because we played ball with so many people. You know, and we didn't see color on the softball field at all, ever. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I've ever seen it my whole life. I integrated when I was in the fourth grade. So it's not like, you know, I go away to college and all of a sudden there's black people. And I, oh God, you know, wasn't like that. I grew up with them. To me, we all bleed red. We've got the same blood. We're the same on the inside. God just put our skin different to protect us from the sun because of the areas that we were in or Big Bang or whatever you believe in. You know, I don't want to offend anybody by saying that, but you know, whoever put us here, you know, their skin is dark for a reason. They live in a tropical area where the sun is hot and they need to be protected from it. That's why their skin is dark. We, on the other hand, apparently were in places where we didn't need that kind of protection from the sun. So our skin was lighter. And that's always been my opinion. So, you know, were there mixed? Oh, absolutely, we were mixed. There weren't a whole lot. I do have to say that.
Yeah.
But, you know, out of 80 people, 20 maybe. So, I mean, you had a pretty good percentage.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that, you know, at a certain point, perhaps due to, you know, the underage people, that eventually you all had to have someone like at the door checking ID.
Right, stuff like right.
That. Was there ever any regulation of who could come inside? Like, for example, like, did anyone ever try and come inside that was like, seemed, you know, aggressive or rowdy or instigating?
One time that I remember two girls fought out in the hallway. They tried to fight inside, and whoever was doing the door, I can't remember her name, but she was a pretty big girl, and she basically threw them outside, and they fought out in the hallway. And that is the only time I remember there ever being any kind of aggression or, you know, I mean, we were just all in there to be free. It basically set us free, you know, because we didn't have another place on this earth where we could do that and not be judged. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we took advantage of it.
Right. And, what about the membership card thing? I think, did you mention that to me?
We had, no, but we did have a membership card when they first started. You had to have a membership card to get in. It was like 10 bucks. It wasn't, you know, of course, 10 bucks back then was a good chunk of money for us. But it was only like 10 bucks, 15 bucks to get in. And it was your card that you could get in because, you know, I don't ever remember there being a cover charge. Mm-hmm. Maybe there was, and I just don't remember it. But I don't ever remember paying to go in there.
Yeah.
You know, unless there was something special going on. You know, if it was a, you know, sometimes they would rent it out for private parties. If it was something like that, you might have to pay to get in or something. I don't remember ever having to pay to get in, which is kind of odd, but still, I don't.
And two more questions about, you know, this kind of stuff. Yeah, I've had a couple people tell me that for maybe the last 2 years or so of the country's existence, that there was a name change to the Hidden Door. Were you aware of that?
It became the Hidden Door, yes.
Yeah.
For a very short time, but yes.
Yeah, and do you know anything about why that change happened? Like, what was that about?
Casey sold it to, I can't think of who, I don't know the girl's name that she sold it to. If I saw her on the street, I'd know her. But I don't remember her name, but she sold it to somebody and they changed it to the Hidden Door because the joke was you always went to the Hidden Door to get into the country. Because the door, when you walked in the place, you know, through the big glass doors, you looked down this little hallway. There was nothing. It was just concrete. There was a door right here, but you couldn't see it from the door coming in. Okay. Sorry.
Oh, it's okay. Go for it.
No, it's
okay.
But yeah, my assumption is that's what they did. That's why they changed it to that. Because we used to kind of joke about how do you get there? Well, the door's kind of hidden, but you can get in there and go to the left. Go to the end of that hallway, go to the left. Looks like you're going into nothing. There's a door.
And were most people who went there regulars or
yes.
Like you always see different
yes.
people, regulars?
Well, we saw different people, like, for example, when UK was in session, we'd see different people, okay? But normally you had a regular crowd that was there, people there every single day. Mm-hmm. Or every time you went in, the same people were there.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
It does make sense, yeah.
Okay.
And
yeah, there were regulars.
Yeah, the regulars.
I was one, I have to say.
It sounds like you were, yeah.
I was.
What were the, you mentioned that there were some like other businesses around you.
Daytime businesses that closed at 5 o'clock or whatever. So yeah. They were always closed when we were there.
Okay. Do you remember what any of them were or was it just?
I do not. I want to say it was a florist on the left. But I could be totally wrong about that. I'm too old to remember that kind of stuff.
And how long, it sounds like you were, you know, a regular there for some time. How many years?
Did you
go there? Yeah.
Probably from 78, 79 till, well, I left in 81. So a good 2 years, it was an every night thing.
Yeah. And 81 was the move to Washington.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Why was it you moved there? Was it for, you know, a job offer?
I had a job offer. They basically said, you have this job. All you got to do is come up for an interview and fill out paperwork. Mm-hmm. And I had the job and they taught me everything.
Mm-hmm.
It was awesome. Well, I'd been at Blood Horse for a while, so I kind of knew some things, but they taught me their way and it was really cool working there. I was part of the committee that put together the weather page with the color and the jet stream and all that. Yeah, I was part of that. So that was neat.
And so was it while you were there that the country ended up closing?
I guess, you know, I left and I was so far away. I'd call and talk to Jane or somebody on the phone every once in a while, but, you know, I just really lost contact completely,
mm-hmm.
you know, just for the new job and all.
Yeah. Was there a point when you heard about it being closed or was it just like you didn't even hear anything about it?
I didn't hear anything. And I think I remember coming back to Lexington on a weekend or sometime when my before I had left USA Today, so it was still in the 80s, mm-hmm. and came back for a weekend, and I think I stayed with Jana. Can't remember. Maybe somebody. But it was already closed by then. And I remember saying, what happened? And they were like, well, they just closed it. So I don't know. I don't know the story behind that. I wasn't here, so I don't know. I don't even know how long it stayed open after that.
Okay, yeah. It sounds like, from what I've learned, it wasn't open that much longer.
No, I don't think it was.
It was like only a year or so more, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, and then they said there was another one that we went to that weekend that I was in. It was downtown, and I cannot remember the name of it.
Mm-hmm.
Not a clue.
Yeah.
But it wasn't anything like the country. It wasn't, you know, because the country was so, we had the same clientele, basically, the same regular people. Those people became your friends. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we did. That's who we hung out with.
Mm-hmm. This other place that you can't remember the name of, was it for, like, women, or was it for just
kind of... No, it was both.
Yeah.
It was both. And, you know, when that happens, it's usually men take it over.
Right.
You know, they might say, open it and say, this is for women. But as long as the men are in there, the women usually wouldn't go. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because drag queens don't like women who are anywhere close to that pretty line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they know you're prettier than I am. No, I don't like you. That was just kind of the mindset of it back then.
Yeah, I think it was over the phone that you mentioned that you had gone, I don't know how often.
Well, we went to Johnny Angel's and basically got run out. We'd go dance every once in a while. They had a dance floor upstairs, but it got to be real techno music. We were like, come on, give us some Donna Summer, give us something, you know, we can dance to, you know, instead of this techno stuff. And it was just, it was, disco was going out, and techno or whatever it was coming in,
mm-hmm.
and they played more of that than, whereas the country played Motown and, you know, the older stuff and Bee Gees and stuff you could dance to, the disco stuff, you know, Donna Summer and, you know, all of them.
Yeah. Did the country have a DJ or someone who, like, controlled the music?
No, it was the owner that did it. The owner did it. That, as far as I know, the owner did it. Now, they may have had a DJ later on, but I don't think so. I don't think they did. I think just JC played it. And you could go to the bar and say, hey, play such and such, will you? Okay. And she'd eventually play it.
Mm-hmm. And when it comes to Johnny Angels, was it that not a lot of lesbians or just women would really go there?
We were not welcome.
Tell me more about that.
Well, it's kind of weird. You go in downstairs, and, you know, they take your money and your coat or whatever. And then you'd head in straight to the bar. Well, you'd sit there for a few minutes, and bartender would never pay any attention to you at all. He's down there talking to these guys. He's not doing anything, but he won't get you a beer, you know, or a drink. And so then we'd go up to the bar upstairs thinking we'd get better service up there. It was the same thing. But then, not too long, right before I left to go to Washington, my friend Kathy Bolton, another girl that I know, was one of the bartenders back there. They actually gave a job to a woman to be a bartender. So we went a couple of times when she was a bartender, you know, because she gave us free drinks and stuff, you know, basically that, you know, and we would dance a little bit and stuff. But, you know, it was just, I mean, it's almost mind-boggling to think back and about, I mean, we were crazy. We did some stupid things. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, they had a huge dance floor at Johnny Angels upstairs. It was, I don't even know if it's Johnny Angels. I guess it's still there, the bar. It's called the bar or something.
Yeah, the bar. Yeah, I've been there.
Is it still?
It still is. I mean, we'll see if it survives COVID, obviously.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But it was going strong up until that point.
Good. Yeah, good. Well, I'm glad. I mean, it's been a staple in Lexington forever that I know of. Ever since I was here in the first time in 1974, it was here.
Yeah.
You know, but... But yeah, I remember driving by with my boyfriend and him saying, there's the queer bar. And I'm going, where? I'm about to break my neck trying to find out where he's going to. That's where I'm going, where, you know. Mm-hmm. But.
You mentioned a few times that you all would get up to some crazy sort of fun nights. So can you paint me a picture of like what would be a really good night at the country? Like, you know, maybe who would be there? What kind of things would you do? What would happen? Just like sort of in a general sense. And you could basically
have your little, you'd have your little group of friends that you, you know, your three or four friends that you run around with all the time. And we'd all meet at somebody's house and start drinking. Of course, the DUI was a slap on the wrist back then. It was nothing. They'd put you in the pokey till the morning and let you go. Not even a fine. Mm-hmm. Well, I lost my train of thought again. I'm sorry. I'm old and on.
Oh, it's okay. I asked like what would be like a good
chemo brain. That's my excuse. Uh-huh. I'm sorry. What?
I asked like what would be a good night at the country? What kind of things would happen? Who would you?
Oh, okay.
Like what made it good? You know,
you'd meet up with your friends. You'd start drinking. You'd be like, I hope so-and-so's there tonight. I'm gonna hit on her, you know, or whatever. We'd be, you know, just jovial and everybody was just having a great time. And then we'd go to the bar. I have to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
We used to eat Quaaludes all the time. We called them disco biscuits because it made us like to dance.
Mm-hmm.
But we would, you know, do crazy things and go to the bar. And the most fun was when you walking in, when you open the door, everybody would go, yeah, like so-and-so's there. Yeah, they're here. Yeah, here they are. About time y'all got here. Blah, blah, blah. You missed da, 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 you know. And that made it fun. That made it really fun because you were welcome. You felt safe. You all your friends were there. They were happy to see you. You felt good about yourself. You know, that was the ultimate. You know, somebody always had a party afterwards because nobody was ready to go home at 1 o'clock. I mean, she'd flash the lights and eventually turn them on and everybody'd be like, no, no lights. You know, it's late. No lights. We're drunk. No lights. but that's how she would make us go home.
Right.
Just turn the lights on. And she always played Donna Summer's Last Dance was the last song she played. And we knew it was the last dance. And that was it. And somebody would have a party at their house and we'd go over there and there would be pot and drugs. And I mean, it was the 70s, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that was a long time ago. But I mean, it was great. I mean, we had so much fun. I don't have words for it. It was just, you felt safe and welcome and wanted. And it was almost like walking into a big bear hug, you know? Just they put their arms around you and protected you when you were in there. And it made you feel better about yourself because most of us grew up, oh, that's wrong. That's wrong. We can't do that. Can't be doing that. It's wrong. No, you can't do that. Oh, no, you know. Oh, you're a bad person. You're sinning. You're this, you're that, you know, and all of a sudden we had a spot where we could go in and go, yeah, and nobody cared. And everybody else was going, yeah, with us, you know? And that was the biggest thing about it is that it was a safe place for us when we didn't have a safe place on the outside at all.
Yeah. I was actually about to ask because, I mean, you've kind of already answered this, but I just want to get it all, you know, very clear. It sounds like there weren't many, if any, other lesbian spaces, but...
There weren't.
I mean, you've kind of mentioned softball and stuff, but... It wasn't anything else. Yeah. And my next question is, were most of the people who went to the country, were they in relationships? Were they looking to find something? Were they single? What was sort of like the dating or, you know?
Both. Culture? Both. Yeah. You would go with your girlfriend or you'd go by yourself and to pick up somebody, the singles would. I mean, it just, everybody went, whether you're with somebody or not. If somebody came without their girlfriend, they'd be like, where's your girlfriend? Well, she felt like staying home tonight. And I'd be like, wow, you got to go out by yourself. That's great. You know, but I mean, it was both. Somebody who was single on a Wednesday night might not be single on a Thursday night because she went home with that girl on Wednesday night. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And Thursday she's in a relationship, you know. And Friday we've got the U-Haul coming, so you know.
Yeah, the U-Haul. Did you end up staying in touch with?
Excuse me.
It's okay. Did you end up staying in touch with any of the other people who went to the country? Like, you know, just staying in touch over the years.
Yeah. Jane and I have stayed in contact quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. Jane and I have stayed in contact. It's like if I saw them walking down the street, I'd still know them all. But not really. I haven't stayed. I mean, like last summer, not this past, but because it's COVID, but last summer at the lake, I got to see several people that I hadn't seen since then. And it was like, oh my God, I know you. You know, I know who you are. And they're like, yeah, you know, so that was nice. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah, but other than staying in touch, I stayed in touch with my pitcher at UK, and that was about it.
Okay. Yeah. And you mentioned softball a couple times. I wanted to hear more about that. Was that like the softball in Woodland Park? Was this softball like elsewhere?
Well, we played, the women's league played at Shillitoe Park in the summer times. UK played at, it's not there anymore, Hagen Field a lot, which used to be on the corner of, wow, I don't know the names of those roads, University and something, where Hagen Hall is now. I don't know if you're familiar with it or not.
I know vaguely the area.
Like over by the Commons. It's over by the Commons area.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I know visually what you're talking about.
And
yeah.
Right field was a very short field. And it was real easy to hit them out and hit the cars. So mm-hmm. That was kind of fun, too.
How many years were you playing softball, like, you know, during the sort of country era?
I played at UK 4 years, played during the summer down here, yeah, almost 4 years, well, two of those 4 years with just the league. We played in Woodland a couple of times, not very much, just in tournaments and stuff, but Shillitoe Park was our main place where we played, like the league and all was held there.
Shillitoe. And was there a name for the team that you were on?
I was on a couple of them. I started out with the name of that team, the Stars. Maybe it was the Stars. Then I played with Bill Fraley's Wildcats until I left to go to Washington.
Uh-huh. And were these teams like, were there sort of, were there some of the people in these teams that like you went to the country with? Were there a lot of other lesbians?
None of them. All of them were there. All of them.
Yeah, they were all lesbians.
Yeah. I mean, you'd be playing a game on Thursday night at, you know, 7 o'clock. Game gets over at 9, maybe 8:30. We all do it afterwards. We're going to the country. That's what we did.
Yeah. Were there any straight women on the team that?
Or yes, there were.
And they were okay with the.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It was kind of like it got to the point where look, this is what it is. We want you to play. We don't want you to go away, but this is how it is. And most of them were okay with it. You know, I mean, I do remember one girl going, well, you're not going to hit on me, are you? And we're like, no. And then she's like, why not? Come on. I mean, you know how that is, you know?
Yeah.
Straight woman go, well, why aren't you going to hit on me? Well, you're straight. Well, but wouldn't you want to hit on me, though, if I wasn't? Well, maybe, but it's you're not. So where's that? You know, where is that? I don't know.
And so obviously you're in Washington for a number of years and mm-hmm. eventually you make your way back to Kentucky.
I do.
Yeah. How can you tell me about that journey or transition?
Well, my girlfriend and I broke up in Washington and I was devastated. And my father was very ill. He had cancer and had an episode, if you will, a spell, he called it, I think, but an episode of some kind. And I was 9 hours away. And I realized I can't be 9 hours away. If my dad dies and I can't get there, I'm going to hate myself forever. Mm-hmm. So I started looking around close places close to Harlem that had, you know, viable jobs. So I went to a little, I think they call it, print shop in Knoxville, Tennessee, and did stripping for them. You know, when you work with film and image, it's called stripping it. Uh-huh. So we were strippers. My mother used to get a kick out of saying my daughter's a four color stripper in Washington. They'd be like, what? So, and then she'd leave the four color out and it sounded even worse. So, and people that knew me would go, she's doing what? You know, what? Not her, really? But so I worked there for a few years, and that's when my dad passed. Mm-hmm. And got an offer from a guy that opened up a new shop here in town, a little shop. And I was like, you know, I don't know. And I came up for a weekend. And while I was here, a friend of mine was assistant athletics director at UK. And she said, meet me at Dudley's. We'll have a beer. I haven't seen you in, you know, 10 years, something. Let's have a beer. I'll be at Dudley's. I said, okay. So go down there. And she's in there sitting with this guy. His name's Rick. And he actually is the head of the printing division of Host Communications. Just by coincidence, he was there. And a friend of hers. And so I sat down, and she said, this is my friend Sally from Knoxville. She's up here, you know, thinking about a job, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, well, what do you do? And I kind of smiled, and I said, I'm a four-color stripper. And he goes, really? I said, yes. He goes, where do you work now? And I told him. And he said, well, where'd you work before? And when I said USA Today, he lit up like a Christmas tree. You'd have thought, you know, that was God's gift to every printing shop in the world to work there. Which it wasn't. It was just a plain old ordinary newspaper like every other one. We just put color on the newsprint instead of black and white. But he goes, will you come interview with me tomorrow? I was like, well, okay, I'm not leaving till the next day, but sure. And he offered me the job that next day right there. And I said, okay. And I came up, and that's how I got back here. First thing I did was drive down Richmond Road so I could see the trees. Because it was in the fall, or it was about August. So you know how the trees form the canopy over Richmond? Oh, man, that was the first thing I wanted to go see. Yeah. And, you know, the funny part, when I left, Man of War Boulevard was a thought. They had outlined it in the newspaper how they were going to do it. Little did I know when I got back that they had put it 2-lane and then it had to be 4-lane. I didn't know all that, but.
Do you remember what year it was when you came back to Kentucky?
94.
Yeah. And how old were you? Around what age?
Mm-hmm. No, that would make me a lot younger. 42, maybe, in my 40s, early 40s.
Early 40s, yeah.
Early 40s, yeah, maybe early 40s, yeah.
Okay. And you've been here ever since?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. This always felt like home. I mean, I'm sure the country had something to do with that.
Yeah.
This always felt like home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned that, not this past summer, but the one before, you had seen a lot of the people that you used to see when you went to
the lake. But yeah.
Yeah. Do you ever run into people when you're just, you know,
every once in a while?
Yeah.
I mean, not during COVID, obviously, because
right.
I have COPD, and if I get it, I'm going to die. So I'm not going to risk that. I'm not going to go anywhere or do anything. So, and I really haven't done it.
Yeah.
Since March. It's about to kill me, but yeah. Mm-hmm. Except pack. I've packed everything I own, I think. Because I'm getting ready to move here.
Right. And that's to.
Back to Lexington. I'm getting closer. Well, I had an accident in the middle of July and broke my arm badly, the humerus bone, the big bone, badly. And asked because all my doctors are at UK and I got so much going on that it would take me longer to explain to people at another hospital about what's going on than it would to drive me to Lexington. Okay. So I asked him, I said, she said, where do you want to go? And I said, UK. And she goes, well, I can't take you to UK. I said, I guess I'll have to go to Frankfurt, you know? So it's just, I want to get closer to my doctors. Mm-hmm. And I want to be able to tell them, if I have to go in an ambulance again, that I want to go to UK. Because yeah. They know me there. They've dealt with me for the last 6 years.
Yeah.
So they know me.
And tell me more about I'm going to ask some, other general questions in a second, but now that I'm remembering, tell me more about the unemployment work stuff that you've been asked uh-huh. to kind of come back and do. Yeah. I remember I mentioned I'd like come back to that. So now I'm coming back.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. When you file unemployment, if you file laid off lack of work, it's an automatic payment. Okay. But if after 10 days or so, your employer sends this, because when you do file unemployment, a letter goes out to your employer stating this person's filed unemployment, stating they were laid off lack of work. It gives them the option to say, yes, they were, or no, we fired him because he failed a drug test or something. So as soon as that the paperwork gets back in, a stop goes on their claim because that's not right. You know, we now have something from the employer that disputes what you're saying. So we have to investigate that. So that's what I do, is investigating. You know, it's call the employer, call the claimant, whatever I have to do to find out. Because you always know there's two sides to every story, but the truth is somewhere in the middle. So you got to kind of make a decision, hear the stories, and make a decision based on that. And that's what I do.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. And then I wanted to get into, this is sort of the last, it's not the last question, but we are in the last sort of little section at this point.
Okay, good, because I think my computer's about to die.
Okay, well, we'll go through it speed.
Like 35% or something.
Oh, okay, that'll be enough time to get. It's like three or four or more. I'd say three questions.
Yeah, it's at 24%, so yeah, okay.
Okay, so we'll do it.
Okay.
The main one I want to ask is, how has Lexington changed between then and now? That's sort of like the big picture question. Yeah.
Well, when I moved away, there was nothing outside New Circle Road except for Armstrong Mill out Tate's Creek. Mm-hmm. But as soon as you passed Armstrong Mill, you're in the woods. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was nothing. Richmond Road, the same thing. Mm-hmm. Even on the other two sides of it, there was nothing outside of New Circle Road. And I got back and I was like, wow, this place is busted out. It's almost a Nicholasville now.
Mm-hmm. And how's it changed? You know, you've mentioned a couple times how things have changed in terms of lesbian, gay, et cetera, acceptance. How has that changed?
It's changed tremendously. I mean, like I said, I can display a rainbow rock out in front of my house and I've not been shot at or spit at or yelled at or nothing. So it's changed. Oh man, the world has changed so much. Just as far as acceptance,
Yeah,
I mean, Black Lives Matter is the same. It's the same deal, you know. Just like I said before, we're not any different. You know, we just feel differently than you do. I don't know what the word is, but it's how we are and what we are.
Yeah,
and we're okay with that, and we want you to be okay with that. If you're not, it's okay, but we don't care if you're not okay with it. That's the thing. And I'm so old now that I can use that excuse all the time. I don't care. I don't care anymore. I've done it up, you know? So mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of how it is. I can openly be who I am. And if you don't like it, I don't care.
It
Whereas the difference was before, if somebody found out or said something to you, you'd say, oh God, no. Are you kidding me? Gross. Really? Why would you think that? You know, total denial.
Yeah.
Total denial.
Mm-hmm. And two more questions now. So we're in the final thing. How did you feel when you heard about this project, like this interview project? You know, someone's looking at interviews about the country.
It brought back so many memories and laying in bed thinking about it. And just so many little episodes and little things and how it shaped me, how it shaped my world. How it shaped how I felt, what I wanted out of life.
Yeah.
Because it gave me a chance to be me in a world where I couldn't be me otherwise. You know, And that, I think that was the biggest thing I wanted to say to you, is that it was a safe place. You know, and nobody doesn't like a safe place. You know, especially back then. Now, if I go in a bar and walk out of a gay bar, I don't care about who sees me or anything. Back then, you walked out and went straight to your car. You didn't want to see anybody. You didn't want anybody to see you. Nothing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so, it makes complete sense.
I mean, that's the difference now, is that yeah. I don't care now. It's okay. I don't care. I mean, it's funny. I'll be in like a store or something, and you know, one of the female clerk will be helping me do something or whatever, and I'll be like, I love you. You're the best, you know, that kind of thing. And I'll go, you want to get married? We can do that now, you know, and they just laugh. They think I'm being funny, you know. But again, we can be ourselves, and it's totally different now than what it was back then.
How did that freedom to be yourself shape you? Because you mentioned, you know, that it shaped you in a way.
A lot. It basically told me how I wanted to be in life.
Yeah, and what was that?
Well, I wanted to be me, and I wanted it to be okay to be me. You know, I wanted to wear pants. If you didn't like the fact that I wore pants, I don't care. That's the three words I use now. I don't care. And back then, you wanted people to like you. You didn't want them to judge you based on who you slept with or who you wanted to be with. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
And now, if they judge you, they're more out of line than you are.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of done a flip. I mean, really, it has.
And that was about my last question. Okay. If there's anything that's, you know, rolling around in your brain, feel free to mention it now. I was thinking in a few months of doing like short follow-up interviews anyway. So
yeah. Well, yeah.
You know,
can I say if you were 20 years older, you'd be in trouble?
Yeah.
Can I say that and get away with it?
You got away with it. You got away
or
with
maybe
it.
If I was 20 years young, I'd be in trouble.
Yeah.
Oh, how's that?
That's definitely and it's also a good note to wrap up on too, like a little like up note.
For that.
Definitely.
Thank you, Adriana, for doing
this. Thank you for talking to me. Yeah, this was
thank you for doing this.
Yeah, of course.
Is it going to be something? Your dissertation, is it going to be something you're going to publish? Can we read it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I definitely want
to. Yeah, UK always puts it in the library and then it becomes available online. So
good deal. Let me know when that happens.
Okay.
I'll love to see it.
Okay.
Thank you, doll. I appreciate everything.
Yeah.
You have a great day and be safe. Okay.
Okay. Thank you. You too. You'll hear from me by email with the forms and stuff like that. Okay.
That sounds great. I'll do them all.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you, doll. Bye-bye.